As we have considered questions that God asked in the Old Testament and questions Jesus asked in the New Testament, sometimes we scratch our heads and say, why did he ask that question? The answer seems rather obvious. And this morning we come across a pair of questions that Jesus asks that fits into that category. But maybe the answers aren't as obvious as we think. In Mark chapter 10, we read that Jesus and his disciples are on their way to Jerusalem. We know that this was the last time Jesus was to go to Jerusalem. It was the time of the Passover, but he knew that this particular year, he himself would be the Passover lamb. He knew that his days were numbered, and he was making the trip with his disciples from Galilee down to Jerusalem. And in Mark chapter 10, verses 46 through 48, the scene is set for an insistent appeal. It says, then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, that is the son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. Now, this is a miracle that's recorded in three of the four Gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record this particular miracle, but they all have different perspectives. Matthew mentions two blind men that were involved here. Luke says that the healing occurred on the way to Jericho, where Mark says they're coming out of Jericho. Mark is the only one that gives us a name of one of the beggars, Bartimaeus. So how do we reconcile those differences? Well, first of all, Jericho, in the time of Jesus, was actually two cities. There's Old Jericho and there's New Jericho. And that's even true today. I remember many years ago doing some family history research. And it took us back to the state of Delaware. The very first member of my mom's side of the family came from England and landed in what was called Newcastle, Delaware. And there were actually two towns called Newcastle. There was Old Newcastle, which had pretty much preserved the old city from way back in the Revolutionary era. And then New Newcastle was about 3 miles up the road, much more modern. And Jericho's the same thing. There was the old ancient Jericho, and then a few miles beyond that was the new Jericho. Herod the Great had built that city and actually had one of his palaces there. And so we can see how, you know, one gospel says he's coming out of Jericho, probably out of the old Jericho, heading toward the new Jericho. And that's where this particular incident takes place. I mentioned that Matthew mentions there was two blind beggars sitting by the road. That you find that in chapter 20 of Matthew's gospel. Both Mark and Luke focus their attention on one. And again, Mark gives us his name. I think they're probably both right in that there very well could have been two blind beggars that were there that Jesus healed, but one of them went on to be a follower of Christ, as we're going to see in our passage today. The fact that Mark names Bartimaeus in the story is probably indicative that he had continued to follow Jesus and was known by the early Christians. They would have remembered him. They would have known who he was. So that's why Mark would have probably named him. Now, I know that some people get all bent out of shape when gospels don't have all the same details and facts. Oh, the Bible's contradicting itself. No, not really. If you think about an incident that has more than one eyewitness, they all have different vantage points. They're all going to see different things. Doesn't mean that one's right and one's wrong. When you put all of them together, then you see where the story lies. The truth is actually in all of the stories as they are brought together. So don't let those differences bother you. In fact, it shows that we have independent eyewitnesses, not everybody copying off the same sheet. So that's actually a good thing from a historian's perspective. Getting back to our story, though, we see Bartimaeus, blind, unable to support himself, and so he is reduced to begging on the side of the road. He was one of society's expendables at that time. He was a nobody on the road of life. His persistent call, "Jesus, Son of David, have pity on me," really was an embarrassment to everybody around him. They're trying him to get him to be quiet. That didn't work. All the more he starts calling out. In fact, the word that's rendered cry out in verse 47, it's a Greek word that literally means to scream or to shriek. All right, he's really making a lot of noise here. And you know what that's like, you know, when you're out in public and, might be a child or maybe it's a person and they're making all kinds of noise and you kind of feel embarrassed for them. It's very uncomfortable. And so they're trying to get him to quiet down. I'm sure they thought that this important rabbi from Nazareth didn't have time for a blind beggar. So Bartimaeus, just be quiet. Let him go by in peace. But what Bartimaeus was screaming is very meaningful. There's more than meets the eye, I would say. He's saying, "Jesus, Son of David, have pity on me." That phrase, "Son of David," is not often found in the Gospels, but it was very much a messianic title. When Bartimaeus calls Jesus the Son of David, yes, that was true, literally. He did come from the lineage of David, but the Son of David was one of the things that they referred to as the Messiah that was coming. So Bartimaeus is saying, "Jesus, you're the Messiah." And based on that, have pity on me. Because they knew from the Old Testament prophets that the Messiah would heal the blind, among other things. So Bartimaeus is really making a statement of faith here when he calls out in these words. He's also begging for pity. He's throwing himself at the mercy of Jesus. He's not claiming anything. He's just asking for healing that was associated with the messianic blessings that would come with God's kingdom. You know, in coming to Jesus, we need some of that boldness that Bartimaeus portrayed. You know, Jesus said time and time again, be persistent in prayer. Don't give up. Keep praying and don't give up. Even though the crowd was trying to silence him, Bartimaeus was not giving up. He was going to get the attention of Jesus as he was passing by. May we be like those that are described in 1 Peter 1:8. Though you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him. You may remember after the resurrection, Jesus appeared to his disciples, but Thomas wasn't there. And when they told him, he said, "Well, I won't believe unless I can put my fingers where the nail prints is in his hands." And sure enough, the next week, Jesus appears and Thomas is there. And he says, "Well, here you go." And Thomas falls to his knees and says, "My Lord and my God." And Jesus said, "You believe because you have seen. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe. That was Bartimaeus. Literally, he could not see, and yet he believed. He knew enough about Jesus to understand who he was and to throw himself at Jesus' feet, begging for mercy. Someone once asked blind Helen Keller, "Isn't it terrible to be blind?" And she responded, "Better to be blind and see with your heart than to have two good eyes and see nothing." Bartimaeus could see, even though his eyes weren't working. Now this brings us to an intriguing approach from Jesus in verses 49 through 51. Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling to you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. Jesus asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" That's the question I'm focusing on today. What do you want me to do for you? Now, if Jesus appeared to us and asked that question, we might think, "Oh my, there's so many options, so many possibilities. Gee, I'm going to have to think about that and get back to you," right? You know, it could be like Solomon, who at the beginning of his reign, God appeared to him and said, "I will give you anything you want, just ask." We're like, wow, you know, there's so many things you could ask for. What's a blind beggar going to ask for, right? I mean, isn't that obvious? Why would Jesus ask such a simple question? But what I find fascinating is this is not the first time Jesus asked this question, even in this chapter. If you go up several verses before, in Mark 10, verse 35, then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. "Teacher," he said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." And Jesus said, "What do you want me to do for you?" Same question. Same exact question. What do you want me to do for you? We're going to see James and John had a very different answer. But isn't it amazing that Jesus, God the Son, all-knowing, all-powerful, he knows us better than we know ourselves. He knows our needs better than we know them. He asks, "What do you want me to do for you?" Isn't that fascinating? One author writes, "What do you want me to do for you is the most important question God ever asks us." Whoa, that's saying a lot. He went on to say, it's one question that we frequently give the wrong answer to. We tend to think too short-sightedly. You know, we're too wrapped up in the moment or in the here and now. We ask for, you know, all the wrong things in life. But that one answer to the question will reveal whether we want death or life, whether we want to be healed from our blindness or selfishly want to use God to do our bidding and fulfill our own desires. Far too many ask far too little of Jesus. They see an extra margin of comfort in their miserable slavery to sin when they could be asking for and receiving a full measure of God's forgiveness and mercy and grace. We tend to ask for too little. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not one of those name it, claim it people that, you know, go tell God, you know, whatever you want, and he's going to give it to you. Again, that would be asking God too little. What are the real needs? What do we really, really need? You know, Jesus could very easily have said, "Well, it's obvious what you need. I'll fix it for you." But Jesus wanted Bartimaeus to admit what he needed. He wanted to know that Bartimaeus understood what his real need was. There's another incident in the life of Jesus that reflects this. It's over in John's Gospel, chapter 5. Again, another one of those questions that make us think, really, Jesus? Beginning in verse 1, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now there is in Jerusalem, near the sheep pool, a gate, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to live, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. One who had been there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" Seriously? You're asking a guy who's been an invalid for 38 years, "Do you want to get well?" What do you expect him to say? And yet, notice how he answered. He said, "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." He didn't even answer the question. Do you want to get well? Very similar to asking blind Bartimaeus, "What do you want me to do for you?" It seems so obvious. But maybe it's not. Because I wonder how many of us really don't want to get well. There are an awful lot of people today who would rather be the victim. They would rather have people feel sorry for them. They would rather have people meet their needs instead of being responsible to meet their own needs. They frankly like being the victim. They wallow in it. They identify by it. That's who they are. That's their identity. If Jesus were to heal me, who would I be? Who would take care of me? So yeah, there are a lot of people that Jesus would ask that question to, and they're like, "No thanks, I like it the way things are." And that might seem ridiculous. But look at it spiritually. Do you really want to get better? Let me put it another way. That's going to come back to our story in Mark 10. Do you want to be saved? And there are many people today who have been confronted with that very question and say, "Nah, I'd rather have fun. I'd rather enjoy life," because they've bought into Satan's lie that to be a Christian means everything's dull and boring. One very popular talk show host was asked one time, "Wouldn't you want to go to heaven?" And he replied, "No, I'd rather go where all my friends are going to be." Maybe the question isn't as obvious as we think. Maybe we need to really hear the voice of Jesus asking us today, "What can I do for you? Do you really want to be well?" Think about that before you answer, because if you say yes, that's going to come with some responsibilities. Make sure you're ready to take those on. To bear the name of Christ, to be his representative. Tom Wright shares an experience he had along these lines. He said, "It took some weeks of persuasion before they came to see me. The grown-up son was desperate to get his ailing and depressed mother into some kind of a home where she would be properly cared for. As long as she lived with him, he couldn't do his own work or have any life of his own. She swamped him with demands for help and attention. We looked at several options. There were small communities, large communities, nursing homes, sheltered housing. Any of them would have been real possibilities. The mother, though, saw some flaw in each of them, and which became to her fatal. None of them would do. After an hour, she turned to the son with triumph gleaming in her eyes. "There you are," she said. "He can't do anything for us." But the truth was, she didn't want anybody to do anything for her. She wanted to go on being a victim, putting moral pressure on her son and everyone else in sight to feel sorry for. Yeah, there are those people today. Jesus' question to Bartimaeus addresses exactly that possibility. What do you want me to do for you? Do you, Bartimaeus, want to give up begging here by the side of the road? Do you want to have to live differently? To work for a living? To have no reason to sit by the roadside all day whining at passersby? How easy it is to choose comfort over change. But in verses 51 and 52, Mark records an insightful answer from Bartimaeus. Jesus had said, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. What Bartimaeus lacked in sight, he had an insight. It's evident in how he addresses Jesus. Now, I know in the NIV it just says, "Rabbi, I want to see." The Greek term, though, that is translated rabbi here is not the normal term that you see many times in the Gospels. This word is only used twice. It's very personal. It could have been translated, "my rabbi." It reflects a loyalty and a devotion to that person. The only other person in the gospel that used it was Mary, when she saw the risen Lord in John 20:16. It was not often used in Jewish literature unless addressing God. So once again, Bartimaeus is able to perceive who Jesus really is. When he says Rabboni in the Greek, "my rabbi," this is a personal statement of faith. Furthermore, that phrase, "I want to see," literally is, "I want to recover my sight." It's likely that Bartimaeus was not blind from birth. At one point, he was able to see, and then either through illness or accident, something happened that took his eyesight. The verb is also used figuratively to look up. And I think Jesus recognized the man's faith in all that he had been saying. And so the Lord responds with the phrase, "Your faith has made you well." And again, the English just doesn't quite capture it all. The Greek term here is sozo. It literally means salvation. And there are some English translations that say, "Your faith has saved you." And literally, that's what he said. Others will say, "Your faith has made you whole." Now, yes, his eyesight was restored. He was able physically to see. But I believe it's more than that. His faith had saved his soul. Not just his eyesight. Saved his soul. What a wonderful gift it is from Christ to have your sight restored, but also to have that spiritual insight. To have 20/20, not only with your physical eyes, but with the eyes of faith. Eyes to see the world and eyes to perceive the work and the will of God. To see what God has made, to be able to worship Him in spirit and in truth. You could say that Bartimaeus was given four eyes at this time, his physical eyesight and his spiritual eyes to see. How many of you got called four eyes when you were in grade school because you had to wear glasses? Yep. I started wearing glasses in third grade. Oh, yeah, I heard it a lot. But what a blessing this is. I read in another source that, you know, Bartimaeus received double vision, the physical vision and the spiritual vision. Of course, that reminded me of the song back in the 70s, Double Vision. And there's kind of an interesting story behind that song. It was written and recorded by a group called Foreigner, and became a big hit. In fact, it was the title track of their second album. Years later, the lead singer who helped write the song and who sang the words developed double vision, literally. And they discovered that he had a benign tumor in his brain, but it was growing. And at first they thought it was inoperable, but then a surgeon that had just developed a special way of treating those kinds of tumors went in and was able to remove it. The good news is Lou Graham also gave his life to Jesus Christ and is still to this day very much following the Lord and trying to bring others to Christ as well. But this, some, to me anyway, calls to mind something James wrote in James 4:2. You do not have because you do not ask God. Some people just simply don't ask God for help. Some might feel unworthy. Maybe they're afraid of rejection. Or maybe they just don't believe that prayer really works. They don't believe their request is going to be answered. Some people don't ask because they have no idea that God could possibly solve the problem. Because they see no way out, they don't think there is a way out. They don't think God can do any better. So they remain stuck in the situation they're in. Jesus took an intriguing approach when he said to blind Bartimaeus, "What do you want me to do for you?" Bartimaeus expressed a fine example of insightful faith. He had insight when he had no eyesight. He asked to be made whole. "I want to see." And what he got was not only the physical sight, but the spiritual sight as well. That faith transformed him from a man who was begging along the road of life to a person who sees and follows Jesus. Because you'll see at the end of that passage, Bartimaeus followed Jesus and apparently stayed with Jesus and remained a follower of Jesus even after Jesus died, rose again, and ascended into heaven. It was his faith, evidenced by his persistence, that saved him. That same faith now made him a follower of Jesus. The imperfect sense of following is what grammar experts call an ingressive imperfect, meaning the subject started something and then continued on. This isn't just a one-time event. He didn't follow Jesus to Jerusalem and then go back to Jericho and resume his way of life. He continued to follow Jesus. This was a life-changing event. See, faith that does not lead to discipleship is not saving faith. Whoever asks Jesus must be willing to follow Jesus, even on that up road hill to the cross. Now, before we leave this story, I want to go back to that passage I mentioned earlier from Mark chapter 10 in verse 35, where James and John ask Jesus a question. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, he said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus said. They replied, let one of us sit at your right hand and the other at your left in your glory. That was their answer. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup I drink? Or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. But to sit at the right or left hand is not for me to grant. Those places belong to those for whom they have been prepared. What a difference. Same question, word for word, but much different answers. James and John, they're wanting prestige, they're wanting power, they're wanting glory. Bartimaeus says, I just want to see. Because he realized his need. James and John didn't understand the pride that was the real problem. Jesus told him, well, be careful what you ask for. But some things I can't grant. I believe that these two passages that are set so close to each other in Mark's gospel, this is not just a coincidence of literature. I think this is very intentional. God's telling us something. Mark is quite clear. Bartimaeus is a model to imitate. Unlike the disciples who really didn't understand what Jesus was about, here's a man that had faith. Here's a man that had courage. Here's someone that understood true discipleship. He recognized who Jesus is by calling him the Son of David. He clearly believes that Jesus could help him because Jesus said, your faith has made you whole. And he leaves his begging. In the story, it says he left his cloak and went to Jesus. Well, his cloak wasn't just something to wrap up with. It's what he would lay out and people would throw their money in. So in a sense, he was leaving his way of life as a beggar to go follow Jesus. And he followed Jesus along the way. Interestingly, the way was an early way that the disciples referred to as Christianity. It was the way. And here is Bartimaeus following Jesus on the way. See, this is not merely a question Jesus asked back in the time of his life and ministry. He's still asking it today. What do you want me to do for you? What will be your answer to him? Will you bow with me in prayer? Lord Jesus, this question reverberates down through time. You are asking souls today, what do you want me to do for you? And so many ask too little. They want the stuff of earth when they could have the glory of heaven. I pray that we would take seriously these questions that you asked. Do you really want to be well? What can I do for you? Help us to see with the eyes of faith, to see beyond the temporal, material things of this life, and to desire what is truly meaningful, what will last forever. It's in your holy name that we pray. Amen.